Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another live show. Shout out to the chat, shout out to the late night gang. We have not much to talk about on the roster front. It's been a quiet day for the Lakers and actually most of the league as we've seen the moratorium lifted, but there's been some of the signings and trades have gone through. We had the Giannis trade go through and teams renouncing rights and whatnot, but there's a bit of a holding pattern right now with a lot of uncertainty with LeBron James and his situation and all of the fallout that will inevitably come with that. For the Lakers right now, they have not officially announced any of their moves, and they are trying to figure out a way to add either a starting forward slash wing and or a backup center. So those are the two clear holes on the roster right now. And there are various ways the Lakers can go about trying to address both of those holes. We will be breaking that down today. I have a ton of slides to go through in terms of the pathways for LA to add that type of player, different options, and then the order of operations in terms of how the moves have to play out. So that's what I've spent most of the last 24 hours doing, is breaking down the numbers and just figuring out how does this actually work, and trying to distill it as best I can to make it more manageable, because the apron stuff, new CBA, it's like you basically need a law degree to break all this stuff down, and the amount of contingencies, and then also the lack of available information. Like some of these things, like some of the rules don't even have the stipulations like publicly available. You have to dig into it. So that's what I've been doing the last 24 hours, and I'm ready to break it all down. But on the Laker front, I think it's worth noting that Rui Hachimura is officially off the table. The Lakers have been looking at a potential Rui reunion over the last few days, as well as pursuing Jonathan Kuminga. Rui stays in LA, but he ends up going crosstown to join the LA Clippers for a two-year, $28 million deal with a team option on the second year. So that shows you that you can do team options instead of player options. It is possible. The Clippers had more of the leverage in that scenario. And the Summer League Lakers won today, 88-84 over the Spurs, despite a quiet night from Cameron Carr, who did not play in the second half. Adu Thiro did not play in the game with a right wrist injury, and there's no update on his availability post-game from Summer League coach Ty Abbott. And I will see if Adu is able to return in time for Friday's game in Las Vegas. But they won because Chris Mannion balled out and had by far his best game of Summer League through these first few games. And I think we finally saw some of the offensive upside that he has, and some of that as a cutter, as a shooter, as a transition threat. And he has a really unique game because, like, the defensive part makes sense. He's a defensive menace. He's an ace. And the defensive playmaking is at a very high level. The offensive game is a bit unorthodox. That's where I think you see some of the athleticism limitations with him. But tonight, I thought his ability getting downhill, making shots, hit like a couple sidestep shots, but also give and goes. Like, he just was all over the place. And I was really impressed by his performance tonight. So we could get into that during the Q&A, but I first want to start here with the Lakers' pathways to get a forward. So the Lakers have essentially three pathways to get a forward. Pathway number one is they can create enough cap space to sign or trade for a forward. And this is before they go over the cap. So before you make certain moves, some of the signings, or you'd probably do the DeAndre Ayton trade first, then you could do some of your signings as long as you're still under the cap. But if you do some of these trades where you get off some additional money, if you create X amount of cap space, you can use that cap space to offer Jonathan Kuminga a contract, or to even trade for a player who fits cleanly into that amount of additional cap space. Because once you start going into your cap space that you're penciled in to use, that creates a problem. This is just, all right, the Lakers have X amount of money committed to their free agents that they're signing, to Kessler, to Austin, to, and you know, they're keeping Austin on the cap hold, to Sexton with the room exception. Like, they have all these moves that they're making, right? You got to keep the cap space as it is. And if you create additional cap space, you can then go sign for someone or trade for someone within the parameters of whatever additional cap space you are creating, as long as you're doing that while operating under the cap. Second option here would be trading for a forward after they make their moves. So they make their flurry of moves. They do the Kessler sign and trade. They do the DeAndre Ayton trade. They sign Grimes and Mamu. They use the room exception on Colin Sexton. And then they also use, you know, bird rights on Austin to go from being a cap space team to above the cap. And after all those moves, the Lakers are roughly right now at around $192.7 million. So a little over, like, $7 million from the $200 million luxury tax line. And then there's another $9 million there or so until they reach the first apron. So they got some wiggle room there under the first apron. They are hard capped at the first apron because of the Walker Kessler sign and trade, because they're acquiring a player. And because of that, they have to stay under the first apron no matter what the moves they're doing are. But as long as they stay under the first apron, and I think for them, ideally the luxury tax, though I don't think that's a mandate. I just think to not trigger, or, you know, to knock off the repeater tax and this year, with them theoretically being able to stay under it and still build a competitive roster. And then in future years, it'll be tougher. But like for this year, at least, if they could stay under the luxury tax line, that would be, I think, an added bonus. Or if they don't get off money as a cap space team, or they don't make a trade, they can just sign a guy to a minimum contract. And that would be the third path here. I think that's the one that fans would probably like the least, but that is a possibility. In terms of LA's trade assets, as a refresher here, the Lakers have 3 second round picks to trade as of right now. They're 2033 second, and then the 2031 and 2032 Wizards seconds that they will be acquiring in the DeAndre Ayton trade. So realistically, that's going to have to be either the first or second thing they do, the DeAndre Ayton trade for Jaden Hardy, because that will give them those seconds that they can then reroute in a deal. They also have a first round pick swap in 2032. So these are the Lakers' primary draft assets as of right now. They technically have 3 first round picks. They just don't have access to trade any of them. And they could obviously do a pick swap with one of them with the 2032 first. Then in terms of trade candidates, because the Lakers are not going to trade Luka, and then there's some restrictions now, like, you know, the new guys can't be traded for a certain amount of time, depending on like Austin is, I believe, January 15th. The new players that they're acquiring, it'll be December 15th. Cameron Carr, it's 30 days after he signed his rookie contract. So I believe it's August 1st is the first date that Cameron Carr can be traded. And the Lakers don't even have a full roster right now. So these are the players that would realistically be rerouted if the Lakers make a move either below the cap or above the cap, regardless of which path they take. Here are the guys that they will be looking to trade. First and foremost, it starts with Jared Vanderbilt. This is the contract they will be looking to get off of. If they could get off of this and not use all of their draft assets in terms of the 3 seconds and the swap, I think that would be a tremendous win for the front office, just because the going asking rate has been a minimum of a first to attach Jared Vanderbilt in any deal, just to get to neutral value. So if you're theoretically, if like a player is worth 2 or 3 seconds and you're trying to put Vando in that trade, that's going to be really difficult for the Lakers, because you're going to need to include Vando just to get to neutral value, 2 or 3 seconds, and then you don't have anything else to put on top of it. So that's where either you don't put Vando in that trade, or then you're potentially having to put like a new in that trade to sweeten the pot. So it just depends on who the player is and what the context is there. But you have Jared Vanderbilt, 2 years, $25.7 million remaining. Jake LaRavia, $6 million expiring. Jaden Hardy, making $6 million this year, $6 million team option for 2027-28, but he can only be aggregated while the Lakers still have cap space. So what that means is technically after the Lakers do all their moves, they could trade Jaden Hardy, But if they did that, they could not aggregate him with other salary. So they could not use him and another player, two players for a certain amount of time. So really, if you are going to dump Jaden Hardy in a bigger trade, you would need to do it while you're still a cap space team. So that would be the order of operations here in terms of just like if the Lakers want to put Hardy with Vando or Hardy with Jake, Hardy with Dalton, some combination of some of these mid-size salary, you know, mid-lower size salaries that they have, it would have to be while they're still a cap space team and before they go above the cap. So for example, like they'd have to trade Hardy with one of those guys before they probably do the Kessler trade officially, maybe depending on where they're at financially, it could work. But you know, before they do the Sexton room exception, before they do the Austin going above the cap to re-sign him with the bird rights, like those two moves, Sexton and Austin in particular, are probably going to be the last couple of moves here. Then you have Dalton Connect making $4.2 million. With a $6.5 million team option for the following season. Adu, $2.5 million team option for 2027-28. And then Bronny making $2.3 with a $2.5 million team option for 2027-28. So those are all, I think, relatively manageable numbers. Nothing out of the ordinary there.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored.
Now let's get into the order of operations here. So if the Lakers want to be a cap space team, this is an approximate with how the order of operations would go. Now, technically, some of these moves are interchangeable, but I think it's a little bit more straightforward to, like, for example, the DeAndre Ayton trade, you are clearing additional space. So I think that makes the most sense to do that first. You don't have to technically do that one first, but some of these like moves one and two and moves five and six here are relatively interchangeable. Move number one is you trade DA, you do that trade, you create that additional $2.1 million in cap space. Then you sign Quentin Grimes and Mamu. Then you salary dump players in trades to create cap space. And then you could either sign or trade for players that fit into that exact number. So again, if you're dumping Jake and Dalton, or Hardy and Dalton, or Hardy and Bronny, whatever combination of guys you're trying to get off of, that, you know, X amount of money, $8 million, $6 million, $10 million, $12 million, whatever the number is, that would be the money you would have to play with, that you could either go sign someone within the confines of that number, or you could potentially trade for someone and just acquire someone into that number with the cap space. So you would, you could technically even do that before you sign Grimes and Mamu. Doesn't really matter, but at least you're just locking in Grimes and Mamu. But certainly the Ayton trade would have to be, because you do want to potentially reroute Hardy. I think that's what the Lakers are going to look to do. And you need the second round picks. So that's like the first thing you have to do. Everything from there up until the end is relatively interchangeable, but I think it would make the most sense to just do the cap space stuff first before you finish it out. Then you do the Kessler trade. Obviously you're not touching any of the assets that you're sending to the Jazz in that. So you can't backdoor them and you know, go reroute a first round pick or something. Like, the assets that you're sending to Utah are locked in. So you can't touch those. You do the Kessler trade. Then you sign Colin Sexton. Then you re-sign Austin with his bird rights. And that would be an example of order of operations here with the Lakers operating with cap space to create some additional room to add a forward or a big man. They could go either direction. Then here's the order of operations trading above the cap. So this is if you decide you don't love, like there's no suitor. A distinction here would just be that there's no like suitor necessarily where you could just dump someone. Maybe it has to be Vando, but you're taking back some money, or some combination, you're taking back some money. There's not like a clean trade where you just get off the money, because that's the distinction here between under the cap and above the cap. Is under the cap, you are looking to just dump that salary. You're getting off of, and again, maybe there's, maybe you're sending out 16, you're taking back four, and you're still offsetting there by creating 12 million of space. But like the goal is to get off as much money as possible in that scenario. Whereas here, if you're going above the cap, then it starts getting into some of the trade rules for teams above the cap, but under the two aprons. So here you still do the DeAndre Ayton trade first, and then you could do Grimes and Mamu. Then you could do Kessler, then Sexton, then Austin. So you do all of your moves. You do the two trades, you do the signings, you do the re-signing. Then you trade for a forward or a backup center. You could potentially trade for both. And that's where... but now you're operating, it's different, right? You're not operating with cap space. You're not just taking in a player necessarily. You are going to have to salary match to a degree based on the trade rules, which we will get into. Here's the trade rules. So it gets a little complicated. I wanted to try to simplify this as best I could, but for the Lakers operating above the cap, but being under the first two aprons, which is how they project to operate once they suss out their cap situation. If you have upwards of $8.8 million in outgoing salary, so for example, that could be Jake LaRavia with Adu Thiro or Jake LaRavia and Bronny. It could just be Jake LaRavia straight up, Jaden Hardy straight up. As long as the combined salary of the one player, two players, three players is $8.8 million or less, you can bring back 200% of that plus $250,000. So for example here, if you send out Jake LaRavia in a trade, you can bring back a player, and Jake's making $6 million, you could bring back a player making 200% of his salary, which would be $12 million plus $250,000. So for example here, you could bring back a player making $12.25 million. That's the most you can make for sending out Jake. And then, that's the most money you could take back for sending out Jake. So different versions of this, right? Upwards of 8.8. So it could be Jake, again, Jake plus Bronny, Hardy plus Bronny, like whatever is the combination, as long as it's under 8.8, those are the salary matching rules. If it's above 8.8 and between 29, the number, I couldn't find the official number. It might even be a little bit higher. It might be closer to 30, but I realistically don't think the Lakers are going to be sniffing 30-ish million in terms of a trade with the aforementioned guys, because you're just having to add so much salary together. That would even if you go Vando, Jake, and Dalton, that doesn't get you to $30 million. So it would take a ton of money, and teams are rarely just going to take on like four or five guys, especially with limited draft capital. Like these aren't that enticing of contracts and players, and then it's also not that enticing of draft capital. So realistically, I don't see a scenario in which the Lakers are getting up into the mid to high 20s. It's theoretically possible. I just think it's unlikely. But technically, if you have a dollar over 8.8 to, we'll say for now 29, but it might be a little bit higher. That is, in terms of salary matching, it's a flat, basically $9.1 million. So for example, Jared Vanderbilt, who's making roughly almost $12.4 million, he could take, you take back up to 21.5 or thereabouts with the 9.1 increase from Vando's 12.4. So that's an example. Now, as long as it's within that range, so realistically, if you know Vando's involved, it's automatically in this range. But if it's Jake and Hardy or Jake and Dalton, anything that goes above that 8.8, those are the salary matching rules there. Then if it's above 29 million, you're limited to 125% in terms of taking back, and then you could add 250,000 on top of that. So that one, again, I think is highly unlikely in terms of the Lakers. Like they're not going to be able to trade some of their or all of their free agents and signings and whatnot. And I already went through the list of guys. I think it's really difficult to combine those guys into a situation where you're sending out over 29 million. But it's possible. I just think it's highly unlikely. Here are some potential trade targets that check these boxes within the parameters of what we were discussing. So you have Jonathan Kuminga, who has been a prime target for the Lakers. Now, technically, he's a free agent, so he applies to the free agent list as well, but he can be acquired in a sign-in trade. So technically, the Lakers could acquire him in a trade. Looking at PJ Washington in Dallas, he's making 19.8 this year, but he's got 3 years, $69 million left over. Dallas has a front court logjam. They drafted Morez out of Michigan. They traded for Aldama. They obviously have Cooper Flagg. Derek Lively's coming back. Like they have this surplus of front court talent and guys in that general 6'8 to 6'10 range. And PJ Washington, with a ton of money left over, to me, looks like a guy that for the right price could likely be had. I mean, we do have the history of LA and Dallas, and I think optically Dallas would have to hold their own in any trade with the Lakers, but I think he's someone that for a certain price is realistic. You have Derek Jones Jr., and with the Clippers now going in a different direction, trying to go a bit younger, he's a guy who's in his late 20s and theoretically fits what they're trying to do, and they could still use a certain amount of perimeter defense and shooting and motor and whatnot. But I think he's a guy that, as an expiring, not necessarily fitting into their long-term goals, like would the Clippers move him for the right price, which again, I think is likely going to be the Lakers, you know, at least 2 seconds, if not all 3 seconds, depending on if Vando's in the deal or what that looks like. You have Christian Brown, who we've talked about before on the show in terms of would only consider taking him on if Denver was attaching some real draft capital to that. So is that a first? Is that a couple seconds? I know they have a pretty limited cupboard of draft assets, but something in that range, because you know, he's making 21.6, that he's got 4 years, $103 million left on the deal. So that's a monster contract. You contrast that with like what PJ Washington's getting. And I think PJ Washington's just a better player than Christian Brown, even though he is a bit older. So Denver still has to shed some money with this whole Peyton Watson situation. Even if they get the discount on Peyton Watson, which is how this is all shaken out, or you're potentially shaking out, they still are in a tough spot. They have Spencer Jones, like they love Bruce Brown, and they're just, it would be great for them to shed some money. And I think Christian Brown is the one that they would want to get off of the most. And so that's the one that I think they'd love to move him. It's just going to cost an arm and a leg, and we'll see if they end up paying that price. Cam Johnson, $23 million expiring. Denver needs to shed money. And look, like from a positional standpoint, I think Kuminga, Washington, Johnson all fit cleanly into the Lakers' current build. With Jones, Brown, Dort, and Strus, you are going a little bit smaller because I think with how the Lakers have things set up, you're looking for that wing defender, but also someone ideally 6'7 to 6'9. So if you're not quite in a certain level of rebounder, if you're not quite there, like Dort and Strus are just not, they're not at the size or the rebounding that you'd probably want from that spot. Similar thing with Christian Brown, like he's a better rebounder than those guys, but still a little bit on the smaller side, around 6'5, 6'6. So I think these guys hit the target to a degree. I think they're better than LA's current options, but I just want to acknowledge their imperfect fits to varying degrees. And some of them are more big guards. Some of them are more wings. Some of them are true forwards. And it's a bit of a spectrum here, but I think these are guys that are likely available slash are currently available. And just depends on the price that their team is looking for and the price that the Lakers are willing to meet. Then you have Lu Dort, $17.7 million expiring, not 17.1, but OKC is still over the second apron. So maybe they look to get off of him, or they do have a front court logjam to a degree at the five. So maybe they get off of center Jalen Williams or Thomas Sorber or something like that. We'll see what they end up doing. And then Max Strus with $16.7 million expiring. Cleveland still needs to shed money, and we'll see what happens with LeBron and if he ends up going there, if they end up doing some sort of deal with Jared Allen or what happens with James Harden. But Strus could end up being a casualty in the Cleveland cap situation. So I think he's another one that is worth mentioning. But yeah, I mean, among this group, I think PJ Washington stands out. And if we go back to my wing targets episode that I did with JSM right before free agency started, PJ was my highest rated guy out of all these guys. I think with how LA's roster and front court has played out, PJ's rebounding here is the thing. He's got the proof of concept with Luka. He's coming off a poor shooting season, but I think it is historically the level of shooter that you want at a minimum. I think it's closer to like the minimum level of shooter, but he passes the test there. But really, to me, it's the combination of defense. His metrics are still elite across the board. He's more of a 3-5 defender than he is like a 2-4 or 1-3. But with Quentin Grimes likely being that starting point of attack guy, I think it would give you a nice contrast there where Quentin Grimes is guarding the ones and the twos. PJ Washington is guarding the threes and the fours. Luka and Austin are guarding the secondary guys. Luka guarding the secondary front court guy. Austin guarding the secondary backcourt guy. And then you have Kessler as, you know, guarding fives, the primary rim protector. So of these guys, I would say PJ Washington is by far, I think, the best fit and checks the most boxes for what the Lakers currently have and currently need. After that, it's tough. I might go Cam Johnson, honestly, because he isn't expiring. And again, I'm looking at slightly bigger guys. He's in that 6'7", 6'8" range. And he's an okay rebounder. He's not a great rebounder. And I think he's a better defender than people give him credit for. He's not a stopper, but I think he's like slightly above average overall. Just not at the level of like a Dort or a Derrick Jones or someone like that. But I think the shooting mixed with the basketball, like I think he would fit in nicely with the offense in terms of just the shooting, the passing, the relocating. He's a high IQ basketball player. I think he checks some of the boxes. Now, I guess thinking through it, like I still want some more defense. So maybe I shift then toward Derrick Jones Jr. I don't know if he's quite the level of offensive player. And it really feels like, as I've thought more about the Lakers build, it feels like, especially with that top seven, top eight, their goal is like, do not have an offensive liability out there. I think that's a big reason why they went with Colin Sexton over Marcus Smart or even Kelly Oubre with that room exception. Is I think they're trying to build a top eight or a top nine where there's just no offensive liability. And with the exception of Kessler, who is efficient and a high level finisher, but relatively limited. We'll see how his shooting and passing from last season develops into this season. With the exception of Kessler, everybody can shoot threes at least the league average level. Everyone can pass and move and dribble at a certain level. So Derrick Jones, Lu Dort, those guys don't really fit within that. I think they're below the level you want overall offensively. Everyone else here, I think, is at least at the level, if not above it. But that, to me, I would say PJ Washington, Derrick Jones Jr., and Cam Johnson would be my three favorites. Christian Brown, again, if you're getting the first, that's when I start to consider him. He, to me, is more of a 2-3, so it just shifts. Like, you're not really getting a true... He's like a 2.5, maybe 3 at highest. So he's not really like a big forward. And he's a good rebounder for his position, he's not necessarily the level of rebounder you would want. Like he would immediately become the third best rebounder in the lineup, but I would want a higher level rebounder. Lu Dort, I'm lower on him than consensus and just think that you're similar to Brown. It's like, it's kind of a positional thing where he's in that kind of 2-3 hybrid. Schrutz, I guess, is more of a 3, but also not really like a big forward. He's in that 6-6 range as well. And then we get to Kuminga, who I think is right now the most likely of these guys to end up on the Lakers. He comes with a ton of uncertainty on both sides of the ball. The positive side, like offensively, there's just an element of talent and skill that he's got the highest offensive upside on this list, I think, easily. But there's also, he's been a below average 3-point shooter in 4 of his 5 years. He's a bit of a ball stopper. He did not get along great with Steve Kerr and that system in Golden State. And just in general, I feel like the NBA your decision makers are collectively lower on Kuminga. Like he does not have a great perception around the league. So doesn't mean he can't be a reclamation project for the Lakers, but that is a pretty important position where you would be. The Lakers are already taking some gambles here of you're gambling on Austin Reeves being a bona fide number two. You're gambling on Walker Kessler growing into a near all-star level center. Like you're paying him all-star level center money and hoping that he levels up. You are putting a lot in Quentin Grimes to be your primary point of attack guy. And as of right now, your number three option, like you're already taking some gambles and some bets on some younger guys within your rotation. Like, do you want to add another one into it? And then defensively, Kuminga had a really strong defensive season from a metrics perspective, but I think there's just some inconsistency there. Like if he was a high level defender every single night, I think he would be getting 20 plus million or he would have a certain perception that's just not there. So I think the potential is there. The flashes are there. Can he put it together consistently? Just remains the open-ended question with Kuminga. And the Lakers have a track record of like he checks the boxes of former lottery pick guy who's been on a couple teams. Like the Lakers love those types of guys. But if this is like the final, if this is the Thanos ring that you're trying to add here to win a championship, it could go great and it could really work. And Kuminga could be that final piece, or it could be a disaster and you're looking to trade him at the trade deadline. And like, realistically, if it's like one plus 1 or 2 year deal, it's not egregious. You should be able to move it. And even if you can't move it, it's not going to like sink your cap sheet or your future. It's just, it's a wasted opportunity. And like the bad version of Kuminga, I would easily put at the bottom of this list, even factoring in like Christian Brown's contract. The good version of Kuminga, though, obviously, I think he's closer to the top of this list. It's just, are you going to get that guy? Overall, I would say PJ Washington is the best fit and checks the most boxes right now with what the Lakers need and how their roster is shaping up. But I think you could argue several of these guys here. And you know, with the caveat again, that with Christian Brown in particular, you need to be getting a draft pick or 2-3 seconds, something like that, to really make it worth your time. Otherwise, I think you end up passing on him. Then here's a list of potential free agent wing targets. So again, Kuminga, technically unrestricted free agent, so you can't sign him or you can't acquire him in a signing trade. But then this gets depressing. Like this, none of these guys should be starting on the Lakers, and I don't think any of them would be. But when we're talking about, do the Lakers do something under the cap? Do the Lakers do something over the cap? Or do the Lakers just stand pat and add a minimum player or two? This is where, or I mean, technically there's like a, within the third version, it could just be dump Dalton, dump Hardy somewhere. You don't take anything back necessarily. And then you go sign someone with that. Like, and this would be the pool you're pretty much picking from. Like Matisse Thybul, I think he's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Not like as good as he was a few years ago, but still solid, still really good. I just think he's a fringe rotation guy at this point. Spencer Jones, I like, shot really well in the playoffs. I think he's underrated defensively, but he's an RFA, which is, you know, brings its own complications, even though I don't think he's at the level where he's a no-brainer must keep for Denver. But that is something you have to potentially navigate. Bruce Brown and Gary Payton Jr. are more of these power forwards on offense, but guards defensively. So they check a unique box with their profiles. Ochai Agbaji, the Nets just rescinded his rights as a restricted free agent. So he's unrestricted. You also have Zaire Williams. So both those guys have had their rights rescinded and are free to hit the market. Then Nicholas Batum, which, he doesn't really fit what the Lakers are going for. He's in his late 30s. So I think just based on this group, like he deserves consideration. It's just the Lakers are looking to stay in the late 20s and below. So even Gary Payton II might be out of their price range. Bruce Brown, borderline there. But this is the group. And none of these guys are starters. I think in the case of Brown and Gary Payton, have proven to be rotation guys on their respective teams and their respective systems. But Gary Payton didn't have a good tenure in Portland. Bruce Brown struggled in Indiana and Toronto relative to his performance in Denver. So we just don't know if those guys are system players, right? And they might just be best staying in Denver and staying in Golden State respectively. Ochai Agbaji and Zaire Williams have some upside, but they also have some question marks. And at this point, that's more of a lottery ticket situation where you just hope, you give them a minimum and hope that they hit, right? But the Lakers have like several of those guys already in the rotation with Adu and you know, Cameron Carr. We'll touch on him, I'm sure, in the Q&A. He looks ahead of schedule right now, but the Lakers, I think, would like some certainty to some degree with some of these guys, and it is really difficult. Like Matisse Thybulle, I think you know what you're getting. Bruce Brown, Gary Payton II, depends on the system. And then everybody else, like Batum's on his last legs, Agbaji, Williams, Jones, and Kuminga, those guys are all wild cards. And for the minimum, it's okay. But when you're talking, I think in Kuminga's case, a bit more than that, there is some inherent risk there. And then final couple ones here.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
The center market's even worse. So this is the free agent center market. You're at Moussa Cisse, who is this is in order for me in terms of my top targets. Moussa Cisse, restricted free agent out of Dallas. They lost Marvin Bagley. So I think with Cisse, with the potential he showed over the second half of last season, they're probably going to just retain him. And I wouldn't want to pay him more than the minimum anyway. So I would throw a minimum bid and Dallas would probably match that. So I think unless there's some sort of sign and trade where maybe you're sending them a second or something like that, like a Washington second, they really want that. Maybe you could work something out with Cisse. But other than that, like Nick Richards, I think is, he's grown on me just based on the options. Like to me, with Cisse being unrealistic, in my opinion, Nick Richards is my choice for most realistic. I don't think he's good enough defensively. And I think he's gotten some opportunities and to me been relatively underwhelming. Like this was someone that people were talking about investing your first round picks and whatnot on the trade market a couple of years ago. And I just don't think he's been that level of player. So for a minimum player, I think he's fine. I don't think he's as good as Jackson Hayes. I don't think any of these guys are as good as Jackson Hayes. So like looking at losing Jackson and DA, the Lakers are going to take a step back at the backup five spot, but that's just part of it. And then Kevon Looney and Jonas Valanciunas, I just don't think are playoff. You know, they're not 16 game players to me. Like just like imagine these guys in a series against OKC or San Antonio, and you can't because it's just, it would not work. Right. So Valanciunas was a bit of an innings eater during the regular season with Denver this past year, but we saw in the Minnesota series, he was completely unplayable. Kevon Looney, you know, he's a wily veteran, right? And he's got the championship experience with the Warriors. He's played in the biggest games on the biggest stage. And I think he's got the IQ and just, you know, with the rebounding and some of the tricks of the trade. Like I think he could maybe be an innings eater for a little bit, but I just, those guys cannot play on the floor at the same time as Wemby or Isaiah Hartenstein or Chet or any of these guys. Like that would be a disaster. So if you're landing on this type of big, you're really putting yourself in a corner where, like, if Walker Kessler goes down at any point, if Walker Kessler went down when you had DeAndre Ayton, you at least could be like, all right, DA, step in 30, 32 minutes a night. Give us what you gave us last year. If he goes down for a month, you are completely screwed with any of these guys, really, I think. But like Richards is the one, I guess you could talk me into being, you know, borderline rotation level in the playoffs, though I think probably not. So, I mean, this is just the state of where the Lakers center position is at. I think clearly it would make more sense to trade for somebody, but we'll see if they're able to do that. And you're obviously going to prioritize the starting wing / forward spot. So if you could find a way to just, I mean, look, if you could do the PJ Washington trade and get Cisse in that and like just unload the clip, 3 seconds and a swap for PJ Washington and Cisse, I would do that in a heartbeat. But I don't know how Dallas would feel about that. And then final one here, we've talked through the no trade. So you know, we did order of operations with cap space, order of operations above the cap. And then this is order of operations with no trade. So again, you just do the DA trade, you sign Grimes, Amamu, Kessler, Sexton, Austin, you do all of your business that you have already committed to doing. And then at the end, you sign players for vet minimum contracts. So again, technically, you could still, you know, being above the cap, dump some guys, not take back salary, but with, you know, maybe take back less salary just to give yourself, alleviate some room, and then sign some vet minimum guys if that's how you want to go about it. But like realistically, in this case, it would just be doing your moves and then signing a player or two. Lakers right now are at 13 players to, you know, signing a couple guys. You'd get to 15. Now we'll see what happens with Bronny. If he ends up getting traded to wherever LeBron goes, and again, Hardy, they might try to reroute him. Maybe they expand the trade with the Wizards to a three-team trade and Hardy goes elsewhere, or they expand the Kessler trade to a three-team trade and Hardy goes elsewhere than that, right? So there's different ways to go about it, but the key associated with Hardy is if you want to aggregate him, it has to be, well, not only if you want to aggregate him, if you want to trade him, it has to be while you're a cap space team. Otherwise, there'll be a 60-day, you can't trade him for 60 days, and then you can't aggregate him with other players as well. So that's the final note on that. But just wanted to talk through it again. So like, if you look at it, three basic pathways. The Lakers can create enough cap space to sign or trade for a forward before they go over the cap. Two, they could go over the cap, do their moves, and then trade for the forward with some of those trade restriction rules or, you know, parameters. Or they could just stand pat and gamble on a minimum signing depending on who is available there. And here are the, again, here are the trade rules where under 8.8 million, you can bring back double the salary plus 250K, 8.8 and a dollar to roughly 29 million. You can just bring back 9.1 million above. And then 29 or more, you're limited to 125% plus 250,000. But appreciate you guys for rocking with me. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back tomorrow.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.